but we lost money in our house, our equity in our house. My wife lost her job. And it was kind of that my eyes were opened to that prepping world in a sense, like whether it's catastrophic, whether it's apocalyptic, or whether it's just you lose a job, you end up sick, you have some type of personal emergency, your own apocalypse, if you will. And I really started in the prepping world, but then realized very quickly, like, that's not sustainable.
Welcome to Thrive in the Future podcast, positive solutions to help you thrive, homesteading, gardening, community, side hustles, and building skills. If you like this content in this podcast, then shoot us a tip on Venmo or Cash App at Thrive in the Future, or go join the mailing list and the Telegram group where Grant Payne shares all of his adventures. And that's at signup.thriveinthefuture.com. Okay, welcome back to Thrive in the Future. This week I have Jeremy, Do We Like Donuts, on Instagram and TikTok. Tagline is raising chickens, growing your own food, and striving for a more sustainable life. Welcome, Jeremy.
Thanks, Scott. Thanks for having me. Yeah, the username is makes no sense when it comes to homesteading. It's a crazy story about kind of how I ended up with it, but here we are, and it was gained a following, and kind of had to stick with it at that point. You know, you can't change it. I think at one point I even had like a picture of a donut on my TikTok page, and ended up with like 10 or 20,000 followers. And I was like, well, maybe I should change that to something more relevant. But yeah, Do We Like Donuts has nothing to do with what I talk about, what I do, more homesteading, chickens, hopefully bees. We can talk about that in a minute.
Yeah.
And then I know you saw some of that whole saga, and then even some prepping stuff kind of thrown in there. But yeah, Do We Like Donuts is just a tag that I stuck with, that I picked out to begin with. And I've,
cool. How'd you start, and how'd you get to where you are today?
Yeah, so I kind of got to go back to the beginning of where I really started was in 2008 when the market crashed. Mm. We realized like we lost like $30,000 in equity in our house, and we came out far better than a lot of people. But we lost money in our house, our equity in our house. My wife lost her job, and it was kind of that my eyes were opened to that prepping world in a sense, like whether it's catastrophic, whether it's apocalyptic, or whether it's just you lose a job, you end up sick, you have some type of personal emergency, your own apocalypse, if you will. And I really started in the prepping world, but then realized very quickly, like, that's not sustainable. Like, what happens when the food runs out? You can stockpile food and precious metals and seed, all these things you can stockpile. What happens when they run out?
Right.
I mean, you go and you take it from your neighbor. I don't want to be that guy.
Yeah.
You know, you take it from someone else that's, you know, growing their own food or stockpiled their own. I don't want to do that. And so I kind of started down that, okay, I need to learn to replenish some of these stockpiles. So I need to learn to garden. I need to, kind of learn chickens and livestock and all these things. And it's probably been about a 15-year journey since I really started. I guess, what was 2008? It's been a minute. So more than 15 years, but
yeah.
That's really kind of where I started, was that whole prepping mentality. And as far as the TikTok and the Instagram go, it really started with TikTok. I made a funny video about prepping, and I don't even remember what it was at this point. But I got like a few followers here and a few followers here, and it was like 5, 10, 15,000 followers. And then I started talking about gardening stuff and gained more followers. And then there was a chicken video that had a sick chicken, and everybody fell in love with it. I had like 10 million views. and my following just kind of kept growing and growing. And I think now I'm sitting at about 250 or 255,000 on TikTok and like 30,000 on Instagram. Mm-hmm. And a nice whopping 169 on Twitter or X. I don't have the following on X like a lot of other people do, but yeah, like it really kind of evolved from that prepper mentality to kind of growing your own food and thinking like, I've got to be more sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
Like if the world comes to an end, if there's some economic collapse or solar flare or EMP or whatever, catastrophic apocalyptic event that people want to dream about. Well, I mean, your stockpile's gonna run out. You better be able to grow your own food. You better be able to raise chickens. You better be able to raise pigs or cows or whatever, or even be able to barter for that matter. But
Absolutely.
so that's kind of how I got to where I am.
I had a similar thing, but one of the things that you quickly figure out is like, it's all fear, fear, fear. Oh, I don't have enough. Oh, I don't have enough. Oh, I don't have enough. I'm not doing enough. And then,
You'll never have enough.
and then my other friend is Prepper Dave. He's like, training to fight off the horde and stuff. And I'm just like, okay,
I
what do you,
mean,
how's that going to work? So.
with like The Walking Dead or something. I mean, yeah, it I was at a farmer's market. We used to sell t-shirts, and we would sell them at our local farmer's market. And the guy beside us, he made these like these beautiful wooden flags, and we've got one in our upstairs room. And he was kind of that same mentality of the prepper mindset. And we were talking one day, and he goes, "I'll just go take it from whoever else has it." I'm like, "I don't want to be that guy though." Like, and also you got to think like a lot of people that grow their own food, they can probably defend it too.
Right.
Maybe not all, but I think it's aside from the apocalyptic end of the world prepper side, but even just from a sustainability from a planet, you look at big ag, it's how many people can that really sustain? How much further can that take us? And I think we even have to get back to like Victory Gardens, backyard gardening, homesteading, and we've seen a rise of that. But I mean, think back 50 to 100 years ago, everybody had a homestead, right? Everybody grew their own food to some
Right.
degree. We've
Victory
gotten
Gardens.
so far away from that. And I think that's, I came from a very much, this is going to sound really bad, but let the world burn, spray it with Roundup, who cares about this planet? We're all going to die at some point, to very much now a like, hey, okay, we got to be responsible for this planet. It's the only one we got, unless
Right.
you're Elon Musk and you want to go to Mars. But like I don't use Roundup anymore. I don't, we got to take care of it. And I think people need to get back to that, living off the land at least a little bit, even if you're growing a few tomato plants and a cucumber vine or something like that. And that's part of kind of what my channel's about is trying to, I mean, entertain people, but teach people like it's not hard. You got to start somewhere.
Yeah. And waiting until the apocalypse is too late to start. I mean,
I had
how many years did it take before I was fighting my land and the compacted soil and the overly sprayed things for years until it started clicking?
right. Well, I mean, like that's the first year. So I have a friend who he said, "Well, if the lights go out, I'll just plant some seeds." And I just thought, "No, no, you won't. I mean, you might, but you're not going to get anything from it. It's not that easy. I mean, it is, but it's not, right?
Right.
Mother Nature doesn't need us. But if you want to cultivate the land and grow stuff, you got to be somewhat intentional about it if you want to maximize your yields." But when I think back to the first garden that I grew, I mean, like I took three tomato plants and put them on the top of a berm in clay soil and completely neglected them. Like I didn't know what I was doing.
Right.
I took this is almost somewhat embarrassing, but like I took a packet of lettuce and like a plastic container, no drainage, put some dirt in it and just dumped the seeds in there and thought that I was going to have lettuce. I mean, not kidding you. It was like 9 by 13. Like I didn't know what I was doing. I was just like, "Oh, let's see if I can put some seeds in here."
Yeah.
Now that was just pure stupidity, I think, but you could do a lot better than that. But like that was kind of where I started. And every year, tried to learn something new, do it better. My wife at one point even said, "If you keep failing at this, why do you keep doing it?" Because one day I'll get it. One day I'll get it. And here we are, 15, 18 years later, and well, not quite 18, but yeah, 15 years later or so. And We have chickens. Hopefully we'll have bees next year. And we have garden mostly figured out. Always learning, and always failing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we had massive failure this year where my spring garden just doesn't look right. And I think I got some municipal compost that had residual herbicide in it. And then the tree seedlings didn't come out of dormancy. Something happened when it was cold, and we had a long cold spell and with snow in January, and that might have affected it. I don't know. So it
remind
was,
me where you are again.
I'm in Northeast Kansas.
Okay. Yeah, and I'm in Central Alabama, so North Central Alabama. But I had a similar thing. Like, so I had a, I got some compost from someone, and it was really, it was more composted horse manure and sawdust, but it was very much composted and broken down. And I put that, I mixed that into some of my tomato plants, and like the leaves have just like curled up and aren't full leaves, and I'm just, I don't know what to do.
Yeah, that's because the almost all the hay that's fed horses is sprayed with that Grazon.
Yep.
Goes right through them, and then it stays in the compost for years. So my
yeah,
big
it's a
problem is
hard
that I
essence.
get my big problem is that somehow the horse nettle, which are the thorny berry plants, and the pokeweed do just fine in the horse manure, and then if I put them in my garden, then they're all over the place. I've got
Right.
pokeweed and horse nettle everywhere.
I've got pokeweed everywhere in my yard, but just cut it down before it has a chance to spread. But that's kind of a hard lesson. Like I had a truckload full of that compost, and now it's all throughout my garden. It's heavier in some places than others, but is what it is. You have to live and learn from that kind of stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
Even this year, like I was super late getting my garden in the ground this year, which again is another failure lesson learned. Now, this is part of having the TikTok and the Instagram pages, is that so many times I'm like, hey, this is something I need to record, make a video of this, and I put off doing what I need to do because I want to make a video about it to teach other people, and before long it's like I'm too late, or I'm a month behind, and I was a month behind planting my garden this year. Which, I mean, we'll be fine. I'm in the South. We got a very long growing season, but.
So it's not like Texas where there's early spring and then there's hell in the middle. And then there's.
It's close, but not quite as bad.
And then
it's
there's
not
a late
quite as
season.
Bad. Well, and like here, I think my biggest fear is, when you transplant, so I start everything from seed. Which I used to buy plants at the store, and I got into germinating my own seeds, and it's so much better. And then you can keep seeds year after year after year. But
sure,
yeah. But I had seedlings, and I put them in, and you worry about them going through transplant shock because you've waited too late in the season, and it's just I honestly didn't get my plants in the ground until this week.
Yeah,
That's
I
bad.
ended up
That's
replanting
late.
a lot of stuff, so it's just one of them years. But I put perennials in the corner of my garden, and they really saved the day this year because I had plantain. I could mix it in with some, I could feed the chickens. I could mix it in a little bit and smoothies. I had walking onions, and I've got bloody dock sorrel. So, and then I can mix that in with salads and stuff and extend the salads. So, and that all came up fine.
So the walking onions, I had one of my followers ship me some walking onion to plant last year, and it didn't take. I don't know what happened, but they didn't take. They came up, and then they never flopped. They just died. And I don't know if it was the heat. I don't know what it was. When do you plant your walking onions? I mean, because I know that they come back every year. You don't have to actually plant them because they just walk.
Right. Yeah. And I basically thinned them in the spring and then moved them to other places. So like there were bunches of four or five, and then I would thin them out and move them somewhere else. I think I usually, if I did plant them, I plant them in May. So,
Remember
yeah.
what, and I may have just missed the planting season on those. I can't remember when I planted them, but I kind of hated it because I was looking forward to having walking onions, and onions that just come back every year and every year. But
Yeah, I've moved them around enough where they're coming back every year now, and they're all over the place. So, and then I think I transplant them, or I thin them and transplant them in early April. So,
may have to find a way to get me some more of those. That's another, just onions in general, like onions and garlic, and those should be easy things to grow. But for whatever reason, I struggle with them every year. Like I planted garlic in the fall, and I had three plants come up this year.
I've never been successful with garlic.
We love garlic. We use it, eat it all the time. But I'm left having to buy it at the store, which I don't like doing, but it is what it is. Now I did plant some onion sets last year for last growing season. I missed the window this year, so we're not growing onions this year, but I planted some onion sets. But even those, you're really supposed to start them from seed in the fall.
Sure.
And I still haven't figured that out. So there's a lot of things that we're still learning, and I think anyone that says they had it figured out is lying.
Yeah, and
Because we're all learning.
then it throws you a loop. So,
What do you mean? No, just like we just put
well,
something
it
off
works,
1 year.
works. Yeah, it works, 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 and then all of a sudden 1 year it doesn't work. And it's like, what happened? So,
You got to troubleshoot it. You got to figure it out.
We were saving seeds on our tomatoes, and we had these great mortgage lifter tomatoes, and we did that for a few years, and then they all just developed blight, which is probably in the soil and has not much to do with the seed, but and then I just had blight everywhere. So it was like, okay, this variety isn't going to work with that because it's not blight resistant.
Yeah, that's yeah. When you start getting blight, it's a challenge. And I try to mulch enough around the base of my tomatoes to keep the water from splashing off the soil. But I mean, eventually, I think we end up with blight every year about halfway through the growing season, and we just know that okay, well, our tomatoes are done for now.
Yeah, that's about what happens with us too. But these were more than usual, so we had to switch.
What'd you switch to?
We grow pineapple tomatoes, and last
Never heard of
couple,
those.
yeah, they're these huge orange tomatoes that have a citrus taste to them. And they're pretty good, but they got some blight too. And then we tried cross-pollinating them, and that didn't work so well. And then last year we had one cherry tomato, lemon drop cherry tomato, that just gave us hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of tomatoes. And so that was the best. And then we usually have Amish paste or something like that to make sauce out of.
Nice. So 1 year, it's been about 3 years now. I ended up buying it was a hybrid, like a Sun Gold. Those little orange cherry tomatoes that were just so delicious. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to save a seed, see what happens. And I think we're in about the third season now. Of course, watch them completely not turn out this year, not be true to the original. But I know that's not always the case, but that's kind of the fun part of gardening is like you can really kind of play with varieties and mix and match and kind of develop your own genetics of sorts, which is fun.
Yeah, definitely.
Wait, do you eat okra?
No, I don't like okra. Every time I've got okra, it's been really woody.
Yeah.
And I haven't been able to figure out, do I harvest it earlier? And I don't have, aside from the Cajun restaurant in town, I don't really eat okra otherwise. So, I don't really have a bunch of recipes for okra. So every time I harvested it, it was like wood.
Yeah, you have to harvest it when it's small, if depending on what variety that you're growing. But we have a guy, I have a friend of mine who he cross-pollinated two varieties of okra that were very, very tender varieties, and he kind of yeah there it's in there it's in its third or fourth season now of and it's super, super tender. But I mean, like, I can let those okras get, you know, this long and they're still tender. I'll have to send you some seeds if you're interested.
Yeah, that sounds good. Yeah, one of the things that I really found that was really surprising was asparagus, because I hated asparagus growing up. It was either floppy or it was woody. And then the fresh asparagus is completely the opposite. It's juicy and it's great. And then we have the purple passion asparagus, and that's just great. So it's like, you know,
Never grown
this isn't
asparagus.
like, yeah, it's hard for me to grow, but it
Well,
comes
so what's
up.
the secret to it? Because it's like it's a biennial, right?
Well, you got to get it before, you got to let it grow for like 3 years and
Okay.
then and develop a good patch. And it's really calcium, I think calcium and phosphorus or potassium dependent. And don't have any of those things really well in my soil. So I get little sprigs of asparagus, you know, a few of them, and then that's about all I get. And then they immediately go to fronds and, you know, turn into the tree-like seed thing. So, you know,
It's
but
very
for
woody
about
and
a
not
week
good.
there, for about a week they're good. So, you know.
That's one of those things that I need to get into, but I haven't.
So I enjoyed your bee adventure here
Oh,
lately.
geez.
Tell me a little bit about that and how
So,
that ended up. I saw you opened up the side of the house. So give a little background and tell the story. That's
yeah.
great.
Well, so I'm sitting here working one day, and I hear this buzzing. And then it stops, and like I didn't notice the buzzing really, like it was just kind of there. And then when it stopped, I noticed that it wasn't there anymore. I was looking around, and like right here, like a foot from my hand was a bee, like a honeybee sit here, and it was, you know, scraping its back legs, scraping the pollen off, and then it just kind of like sat there and went lifeless. And I thought, well, dang, this bee's gonna die right here on my desk. That's kind of sad. I mean, you know, everything. Insects die all the time, right? But it was just like it's right here in front of me. So I was like, oh, well, I wonder if I can go get a flower and if it'll kind of, you know, get on the flower and try to get some of the pollen. And so I did that. And so then I was like, well, I can make a video out of this. And so I did. And so I, you know, I kind of recorded a few clips of me, you know, getting I put the flower down and the bee crawled right up on the flower and it sat there. So I took it outside. I was like, well, let's see if it wants some water. So there was a little bit of puddle of water. So I put it down there and it took a little bath in the water and drank a little bit, I guess. And then it kind of let it go on its merry way. So I made this video, put it out on TikTok and Instagram. And my sister-in-law reaches out and she says, hey, you may want to check to see that you don't have a swarm of bees in your house. And I thought, well, I haven't heard any more bees. Surely I don't have bees in my house. So I go downstairs looking in the basement. I don't see anything in the basement. I'm like, all right, that's fine. So I got the next morning and there's probably 20 to 30 bees flying around the siding in my house. We have a basement and where the brick meets the siding, they were kind of like right up that gap. And I thought, huh, I wonder what that is. So I recorded the video, put it out on TikTok. I didn't know enough about bees. And I thought they were scout bees. And some people kind of confirmed that that was probably some scout bees. And then I talked with a couple other people and they said, hey, you might want to get you a heat gun or a thermal imaging scanner to see if you really have it. You might have a beehive in the siding of your house. So I bought a
Uh-oh.
thermal imaging scanner. And sure enough, there was a hive in the middle of my, in the siding of my house, actually underneath the floor. It was not in a very good spot at all. But I've wanted bees for years. Like I grew up terrified of bees. And it was kind of one of those face your fear moments. Like, okay, I wanted bees. I've kind of been apprehensive about it. I didn't want to spend the money to get into it. They're here. I gotta do something with them. You know, I can pay somebody to come out and take care of them, or I can try to do it myself. And I'm a do it yourself kind of person. And so I bought the beehive, I bought the bee suit, bought all the equipment. And started cutting on the house. And sure enough, there was, I mean, a hive. I mean, it was thousands of bees sitting in my house. And so I ended up trying to kind of pull them out. I pulled the comb out, put the comb in the box. And I knew, like, if I could just find the queen, the rest of them would follow me. No big deal. I had to clip everything. And I caught a glimpse of the queen. And she was just booking it. And she underneath and was gone. And I thought, you've got to be kidding me. She had gone underneath the joist where it was, I couldn't get to her anymore. And like I went through this whole emotional roller coaster of, I got to keep trying. I failed. Like I even went to the point of, do I just try to exterminate them? Which I didn't like. And I was like, shut up, Jeremy. This don't, you can get them out without exterminating them. And so I called a professional. He came in, he looked at it, and he said, well, just leave the side of the house open and they'll probably leave. They don't, it's not secure. You get your beehive here. Hopefully they'll go into the beehive. Maybe they won't. Said, but worst case, I'll come back in a few days and we'll cut in a back there in the corner. You can't really see it in the camera, but back there in the corners where they were, we'll come inside, we'll cut the sheetrock. And I'm like, then I'm thinking, well, now I've got 1,000 bees inside my house. You know? But he came back a few days later, and well, in the meantime, I had gone back out. I had gone out a few days later to check on them, and they were gone. They had left. And so, which I was bummed about. I mean, I succeeded in getting them out of the house, right? But I failed at doing it myself, at capturing the bees, at starting in my hive. And, that was kind of an upset. I mean, in the end, it was a win. In the end, it was a win. But I still feel like I kind of failed on that one a little bit.
So they
But
didn't go into
so,
the hive, you
nope,
they just took
they just
off.
left. They left. They left. So he came back a few days later, double checked everything, made sure that they were all gone. There were a few residual bees inside the house. And he reached in, got them out, and kind of sealed everything up, and they've been gone. But lessons learned, right? So kind of again back to the you gotta kind of figure things out. You don't I'm a big believer in a lot of success comes from failure. So I know now that next year I'm going to get bees, and I don't need just one hive. I need about three hives, two to three. But there's a lot of things that I've learned in the last, month or so. And so I'm bummed that they didn't stay, but I'm happy that they're out of the house.
Well, you might be able to find another swarm at some
Well,
point.
that's what I thought. And so like I thought I was gonna leave the hive out there and maybe I'll catch a swarm. But after doing some research, or do you don't raise bees, do you, Scott?
No.
So I thought maybe I'd catch another swarm, but then I've heard that, well, really they don't swarm during the middle of summer. The swarm really, February to March. So how true that is, I don't know. That's just what I've heard and what I've learned. But
Yeah, I've seen these
the
bee traps that they put up in the tree, and so they won't swarm right into your beehive. They'll swarm into this like bee trap looking thing that's like looks like a diamond that's up in the tree. And then you take those and you try and, somehow get them to go into your hive.
Yeah, like I, yeah, you put them in there, you'd get the queen, put the queen in your hive, and then the rest of them would follow. But like, I didn't know that there was like this group of, I didn't know it was a thing to go out and hunt hives or hunt colonies of bees. Like, apparently, that's people do that during swarm
Sure.
season. Just it's fascinating. I mean, of course, we can't live without bees, right? We have to have, they responsible. I mean, there's other things responsible for pollinating, but they're one of the biggest pollinators.
Right. Yeah, I might have to get some because I noticed that the I have good looking apples, but I didn't really see any bees on them on the flowers or on the blossoms this year. So
Well, like I don't have a ton of bees around my house either, and I've noticed that the last couple of years. Even though I had a guy down the street who raised bees, but he's moved, so his bees aren't there anymore. And so I'm kind of thinking, well, hopefully I've got a decent amount of pollinators this year, but I definitely want to get into bees, and we'll probably do that next year. But
Cool. Well, sounds
it's a
good. One
learning
of
curve.
the things I thought was interesting is on your links on your Instagram, you've got something about internet in a box. What's that? How's that work?
Yeah, the internet in a box. It's funny that people I made a video about that a long time ago. I probably should do another update video on it. Because people are always intrigued by it. But I the internet in my box, it It runs on a Raspberry Pi. Have you ever heard of a Raspberry Pi?
Yeah, I've got
So
one.
it's a credit card sized computer. You said you have one? Credit card sized computer, and it's a Linux based computer basically. And so the internet in a box is just it's a package of software, and it was developed to be put on a Raspberry Pi or any computer, any Linux based computer, but it was meant to download and store all of this information onto the computer, and then it would emit a Wi-Fi signal. So it acts basically like as a wireless hub. And the idea was that can be taken to remote parts of the world where they don't have internet. So some of these very remote villages in India or Africa, they can take the internet in a box. They can download all this educational content, medical content, all just anything and everything that you want, you can download to it. And it's take it then to these remote villages, and everybody can get on it at the same time. It's not just, hey, here's a computer with a hard drive of information. It's here's a computer. It's a hub for everybody else to be able to get to and access it. You know, so you would just pull up. So you would turn this device on. Everybody would grab a computer, boot it up, and you would just go to whatever the web address is for that device. And you can browse all the information that's on it. You know, the software is free. The information's free. You just have to buy the hardware and assemble it and put it together. Had a bunch of people reach out and say, hey, I want to do this. I'm like, good luck. It's kind of technical, but it's if you're fairly technical, you can make it work. You can figure it out. I did.
Sure.
It was the reason that I built that was kind of the whole, it was the prepper side of things. You know, like I've got a whole bunch of books, you know, medical books, gardening books, homesteading books, anything, self-help, all those types of things. But books are heavy, and only one person can read a book at a time. And I thought, well, if we end up in a grid down into the world scenario, well, if I've got this internet in a box device and a couple of computers or phones or tablets, multiple people can get on at the same time. And I've got it in a Faraday cage out in the garage, and
really,
you know, it's just kind of secure.
Built one out of a trash can. Even if it's in a Faraday cage, it still can be accessed with Wi-Fi.
No. It's in the Faraday cage. It's in the Faraday cage, just as a
isolated.
A prepper store. Yeah, it's just I don't need it now because I've got access to the internet. But
sure.
A lot of people thought that it was truly like the entire internet on a device. And I'm like, that's impossible.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's not live. Impossible. It's not live internet, of course. So yeah.
And a lot of people thought, well, if the internet's down, if the cell towers are out, how can this can't work? There's no way that it works. I'm like, well, it is a device that emits a signal that everybody else can connect to. You don't have to have the internet, the cell towers. You don't have to have any of that. But yeah, no, it's in a Faraday cage out in the garage. And, you know, with a couple of other tablets and old computers that would work just for browsing information.
Cool.
Will I ever need it? Probably not. I hope not. But it was a fun project, and I built it, and it's there if I ever need it.
You'll be the info bookworm warlord.
Hey, look,
in the apocalypse.
Information is power, right?
That's right.
That's what they say.
That's awesome. So, how can folks contact you or look you up?
Yeah, so I am on TikTok and Instagram are my main two platforms. I'm not really active on Twitter. X, it's X now, right? I got to call it X.
I call it Twitter. So yeah, that's okay. Fine.
Twitter X. I'm on Twitter. I created a Facebook profile page because someone tried to steal my content. So I had to go out and create my own page to defend my own content. So I'm on Facebook, even though I'm not super active, but yeah, TikTok and Instagram at Do We Like Donuts. Working on a website. I was hoping to be further along with it now, but that's kind of that's the future project, is having a website that has a lot of the information that I'm teaching, that I'm learning. And the thing is even like creating TikToks and Instagram reels and writing articles for a web page, it makes me learn more.
Sure.
Which is, I think I get more benefit out of my social media presence than a lot of my followers do, because I'm forced to go and learn something. I'm forced to try something new. But yeah, that's how they can follow me at Do We Like Donuts on every, if you see at Do We Like Donuts anywhere, it's me. Because who else would come up with such a dumb name?
That's great. Thanks, Jeremy.
Yeah. Thanks, Scott, for having me.
You bet. Take care.
You too.
Thank you for listening to Thrive in the Future podcast. If you like what you hear, please click that like or subscribe button in your favorite podcast app. Follow us on Twitter @ThriveInTheFute and also go to thriveinthefuture.com.